Howdy. This is Spam, Maps, and Net Abuse. My name is Sean Wipke. I've got listed here my consulting company, the Blue Fez Consortium. I'm also the Operations and Systems Administrator for MrGoodBucks.com. Just another IPO wannabe.com startup. And previous to that, I was the head of the abuse department for about 2 years for a regional ISP up in Virginia called Cornerstone. And this is Margie?
Yeah, Margie Arvin, and I'm with MAPS, which is Malabuse Prevention System.
And I'm Joe Gilliam, private citizen, who kind of worked my way through being an absolute greenie 5 years ago to being somewhat of an AOL expert and how to manipulate AOL and the abuse process on AOL, although I'm not affiliated with AOL at all.
All right. Well, for those of you who are here for the morning session, both of you, or I don't know if y'all are here too, that was more of the how to act on spam, stuff like that. Scott, as far as I know, wanted this to be a little bit more technical one. Also, kind of focusing maybe on more on spam and also other forms of net abuse in passing, probably more. So, since MAPS is in the name of this panel, you want to maybe give an overview of what everything MAPS does?
MAPS maintains lists. The lists that we maintain are used by internet providers to boycott spam-friendly, spam-neutral sites open relays. The biggest list, probably the most well-known, is the RBL, which is a real-time black hole list, and that is for repeat offenders, relays that we cannot get closed by any other means. The intent of this is to stop the spam. We would rather not list people, but if we cannot get the spam to stop anyway, any other way, then we will list individual IP addresses in order to protect the networks. We also maintain the RSS, which is the Relay Spam Stopper, and that is a list of open relays that have been abused to send spam. And the DEL is a list of dial-up user. It's the dial-up user list. It's a list of dial-up IP addresses that are not supposed to be communicating with any other mail server other than their own, because a lot of the spam comes direct to MX, which means someone on a dial-up somewhere connects to someone else's mail server.
Cool. One of the important things off of what she just said was the RSS, which is the Relay Spam Stopper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That lists only open relays which have been abused. Does everybody here know what an open relay is? Cool. There are other blocking systems out there that also list open relays.
You're not going to go there, are you?
Huh?
You're not going to go there, are you?
No, I won't actually go there. But I'll bring them up, you know, just because I want to. There's ORBS, Open Relay Behavior Modification System. I mentioned that some this morning. It lists any open relay that's been submitted to it. If you find a machine that's an open relay, even if you find it on your own or somebody tells you about it or whatever, you submit it to them, they test it out, and if it passes the test, they put it in. Previously, there had been another one, too, the
IMRSS.
Yeah, IMRSS. I always get the acronym mixed up. And that was a site that actually actively went out looking for them. That one got shut down because they were actively scanning for open relays, which is against a lot of internet service providers' acceptable use policies. The philosophy behind all of those is really that if you list them, they'll pressure the admins into turning them off. It's what was done to help prevent Smurf attacks, which is a Smurf attack is when you ping one machine and you get multiple responses back, basically. It's from poorly configured routers and firewalls. They started an initiative to start listing all the places that you could ping and get a Smurf attack from, and that helped pressure a lot of the admins into actually fixing them. So those are a little bit more extremist views on blocking.
And I want to make another clarification. There was an article published by someone that manufactures a filter that compared the RBL to other filters. The RBL is not a filter. The RBL is a boycott list. We do not filter the traffic. We reject the traffic, or we null route it. It can be used either as a DNS query on a mail server, or it can be used in BGP mode at the routers to prevent any traffic from flowing.
Okay, so say, for example, if I ran a data center that was routing email through, and I was going to take advantage of this list, I would configure something so that every time an email came through, I would check with your site to see?
Sendmail and several other clients or MTAs are set up to do that, and they query DNS.
So it's real time, millions of times a day.
Exactly. There is also zone transfers. It can be done by zone transfer where you actually download it to your own DNS machine. That's done under a stealth slave agreement.
And what's you may be going into this later, so if so, just tell me. What would be the criteria by which someone would get on that list?
On the RBL?
Yeah, and also if someone were on the list and didn't want to be on the list, what steps would they have to follow to get off of the list? I realize there's lots of exceptions and lots of weird gray area calls. I'm just looking for kind of a general.
In order to get on the RBL, you have to show exhibit. It's got to be a pattern. There has to be an exhibited pattern of abuse or not that you will not address abuse. There's our page. If you go to our mailabuse.org website, there is a page called under the RBL subdirectory called candidacy. Spam origination. If the spam is actually coming from your network. Spam support services, which means you are allowing spammers to use your network. You are hosting web pages that are being advertised in spam, or even click-throughs.
Let's not forget iBill.
I'm getting there.
I'm sorry.
Can't talk about that one either. For example, if someone is using a throwaway tripod Angel Fire GeoCities page, but the source code reveals a page on another network that is their real page, the host of the ultimate site is also responsible to take care of their problem. Drop boxes, where the replies from the spam are sent or the orders are sent to, and open loop lists is another one. That's considered spam origination.
A lot of places try to claim that if the spam wasn't sent through their system, they can't do anything about it. You know, if you're advertising a website on their site, you know, but hey, if a spam didn't come through our system, there's nothing we can do about it.
Telstra.
Yeah, Telstra down in Australia was by far the worst about that. Telstra refused to do anything. So the spammers would just not use a Telstra system, but advertise websites on Telstra. And
they got to the point they were hosting most of the spammatized sites out there.
And then also kind of like support services. They're you know, companies that make software which is basically designed to spam.
That's
Cyber Creek Avalanche, Email Blaster, some programs like that.
The 9 million CDs.
Yeah.
If those are advertised on a website, the 9 million email address CDs.
Also companies that did iBill, which take the credit card verifications, and they refuse to do anything about that. They just let spammers use their services. I guess I could say some not in maps. It always seems like to me also it's the if somebody comes forward and is willing to work on it, you're not going to get into maps. As long as you work with people and things like that. But as soon as they get belligerent or threaten lawsuits, claim that they're a lawyer when they're not actually, things like that tend to speed
Ed
up.
Ed Terry is a lawyer. Ed Terry is a lawyer.
Yeah. Just not in the state of Florida.
In New York.
Or New York.
Yeah. He is in New York. We get nominations. We get what we have to have is nominations. In order to submit a successful nomination to MAPS, you have to have tried to educate the system yourself. Writing a nomination is a last resort. an RBO listing is the ultimate last resort, because when we get the nominations, what we then do is contact the parties involved and try to get the behavior to stop. We would rather have an ISP serial disconnect a site than list it, because then they're gone. The RBL protects our subscribers. Disconnecting protects everybody. Once you are listed, depending on the situation, because there's a whole lot of reasons sites get listed. If you're an open relay and you're listed, close the relay and we'll take you off. If it's an open loop list, there are conditions that have to be met in order for a listing to be probated. Most cases, you have to agree to change the behavior. And depending on how bad the behavior is and if it's a first-time offender or a multiple offender, what we require is different. And we don't tell people that because we don't want listees to tell us what we want to hear. But if you are willing to work on the problem, we will probate the listing or remove it.
Speaking of the spammer support services, there's one website that on there that got its provider RBL'd, and then they
three
providers.
Yes.
Yeah. He's
on his last T1.
Yeah.
As far as we know.
This guy is a guy by the name of Andy Brunner, writes a program basically that lets you spam. Whenever he's gone through a number of hosts, because he keeps spam or he keeps selling it and refuses to do anything about setting up any kind of limitations to keep people from spamming, because there are some programs that are used, like I know the Pegasus mailer was often used for it, and so the writer of the Pegasus mail program wrote into the license that you're not allowed to use it for spamming.
But there's other things about spamware. Generally, spamware has filter avoidance technology. Spamware will have some of them come with lists of open relays. Some of them come desktop servers, another one. That comes with a list of people not to spam. There are criteria there is plenty of legitimate bulk mail software out there. What makes something spamware is if it has functions that have absolutely no valid use other than to send spam. If you are sending legitimate lists, you don't need filter software or filter avoidance software. You don't need hash busters.
I've got a situation coming up where I've got a consulting client. He keeps getting spammed with the offers of the 66 million email addresses on a CD-ROM. And he keeps thinking that he wants to send out emails to these people. Well, what I'm suggesting to him is not spam mail, but targeted marketing, where, okay, let him buy the 66 million names, but let me go through them and try and find usernames that seem to apply towards his product and only send mail out to those people. And would that...
That would be spam.
It's still going to look like spam.
That would be spam. What you need to do to market correctly is to find a venue that you can acceptably market in, either a web page, news groups, a legitimate method that is not costing the recipient money.
Yeah.
Get them to come to you and say, yes, I want to be on your mailing list.
Okay.
The whole trick to mailing lists is make sure you confirm the addresses, which means when somebody signs up for your mailing list, you send them back a confirmation message that they either have to go to an ASP site, they have to reply to the email. So you yourself that's sending the mail has proof of confirmations. If they forget 2 years from now, you can say no. Because we've had situations where our addresses are forged subscribed. And we have people saying, but you signed up. And it's like, no, rbl@mailabuse.org does not sign up for anything.
Right.
Trust me.
Yeah. The single most important thing is to get the IP address and the date of when somebody signed up. That's the most common thing. If I know before I've signed up for mailing lists and forgotten about it, and that's always a possibility. And if they can show, you know, an IP address and a date, oh, that's, you know, my machine coming in on that time. But if they can't show it, or if they show it and it's somebody else, you know.
But we have gone farther than that, and we are requiring, we have a page up on managing mailing lists, and we actually physically require a positive action on the owner of the IP address to be proof of confirmation. There's too many problems with open lists right now, and with people going into the gap and filling out cards with email addresses on them that they can't verify.
Yeah, it's if anybody's ever been mailing list List bombed. That's the word I was looking for. Where somebody just signs you up on a whole bunch of lists that don't require a confirmation. You know how hard it can be to get off of them. It can be a real, you know, you can end up just getting thousands of messages a day and you can't keep up with how many different lists are still mailing you. If all the lists require confirmation, the worst you get is you get a one-time burst of, you know, please confirm emails.
We were forged to 60 daily lists at one time, and they were in Italy. And getting that, shut off was...
Bless you.
And was hitting an address that was a distribution list, so like six people in the company were getting these 60 a day. So it is a major problem.
Oh, okay. If you're requiring confirmation from a person's IP address, does that mean when I go out here into the hallway and I see one of these musical groups and I sign my name on their mailing list and I give them my email address, I start getting their newsletter once a week? Does that mean that's spam? Even though I want it and asked for it?
If you want it and you ask for it, the one they send to you is not. If you go out there and put my email address on it, and I get it, it's spam. So it's in their best interest to send you a mail to confirm that that's your email address.
Okay, thank you.
It protects them and it protects the rest of the net.
If that's one of the worst things is a lot of people, they get their addresses and they don't confirm like what the person wanted sent to that address. They'll merge their list together, things like that, and suddenly you're getting all this mail. I knew a store owner who insisted on a regular basis of just emailing everybody he knew constantly about store promotions and stuff, and he lost his account numerous times.
And it doesn't have to be malicious. Somebody could mistype your address.
That's something that's happened with my company.
People, you know, we happen to own mail-abuse.org and mail abuse without the hyphen, but there are situations where those are two totally different domains. Nets and comms can be two totally different domains.
Somebody
can make a mistake.
Yeah, we had a situation where an employee of ours added some of his old coworkers' names to our mailing list at their request. They just told him, "Hey, throw us on there," and he left out the hyphen in the domain name, and it sent it all to a guy in California who proceeded to email us repeatedly, cursing and calling us cursing and things like that. It was a lot of fun. I thought you were going to go in.
No. We are probably, this is something that Scott had mentioned, we are probably also the only organization I know that actually has instructions on how to sue us on our website. How to sue. We've had a lot of threats. No one has actually filed. It's both. We have volunteers. A lot of it. There's probably 20 of us now that are paid staff, and it's supported by subscribers and private funding. It is an LLC. People call it a nonprofit. It is actually an LLC. It is operated as a nonprofit, and that's some legal California stuff. But we, Cyber Creek has threatened to sue us. He claims he needs a $2 million legal fund to do it, so he doesn't have the $2 million yet. Now, he does not spam. Andrew Brunner does not spam. Andrew Brunner sells spamware. And he doesn't think he should be listed. We obviously disagree. What? There's a little bit of difference here. The internet is a cooperative anarchy. Everybody owns their own equipment. The internet works off peering. I take your traffic, you take my traffic. When you start sending more traffic and more unwanted traffic than your fair share, it doesn't scale. and I do not have to carry traffic that does not scale. What we do is allow people to not carry traffic from known problem addresses. Because we're not regulating it. It's purely voluntary. We maintain a list. We have a list on our server. If someone wants to use that list, they are free to query our servers and ask for those numbers. We do not make anybody use it.
Call it a boycott.
We are not vigilantes. It's exactly a boycott.
Call it a boycott.
It is a boycott. It's a giant kill file.
Yeah, it's a giant kill file. A shared kill file between everybody involved.
It stops a lot of spam.
How often does it change the neighborhood?
A lot of... I can do some personal experience here. A lot of what I do is I handle our spam that comes to MAPS, mailing lists that we're signed up for that comes to RBL at, spam to the director, spam to our own addresses. I also consequently deal with a lot of open lists, a lot of legitimate companies' open lists, the Gap-type situations. I have worked probably in the last 6 months, I would say I've worked probably 200 lists. I've written 3 nominations.
Some spammers on my on my distribution thing, and you block me. Is there a way to get off?
Yes, you make a phone call or you send mail to RBL out, and when you change the behavior that caused the problem, we will probate or remove the listing.
So I would describe what steps I have taken to prevent the spam, and therefore you would take me off the list?
If they are deemed adequate. The object is to stop the spam. If you come back to us and say, I have stopped the spam or I can stop the spam, then you're removed.
How often does that
happen? All the time. The phone rings all the time. And the thing that's good about what MAPS does is it's a centralized list. For those of you that read news groups or read mailing lists, most people that run servers maintain their own black hole lists. They will block IP addresses. If you get on the RBL, you deal with us, you're removed, and as soon as the DNS propagates, which within a couple of hours, your IP is off the list. Try getting off 500 private lists. And some people will not remove you once you go on.
That's one problem I had with the ISP I used to work for, was that it managed to get on some private lists for having spammers on their network before I got there. And as I went around, I would try to get our name off of there. And to this day, as far as I know, there's still at least one domain which completely blocks any mail coming from our ISP, even though there hasn't been a spammer that's lasted more than 24 hours on there in 2 years. They just simply refuse. We're not certain if they refuse to do the work involved and, you know, actually opening up a text file and deleting a name, or they are convinced that we're a constant spam house or something, but basically for no particular reason, they just refuse to take us off their list. And we had users that wanted to mail there. And one advantage you have when you go through a central list, there's a central authority. You can point them here.
With published criteria.
Yeah. And it's not just some network administrator thing. Oh, I don't like these guys. I'm going to block them. You know, which is an activity which, if you have, it's all just you. That's fine. But if you're dealing it for hundreds or thousands of people, that's not acceptable.
And honestly, our biggest goal is education. We view RBL listings as a failure, and most of us get really upset when we actually have to physically go and do a recommendation to list. In most cases.
The RBL kind of turned into right now it's also a kind of the big stick for whenever you're reporting spam. If you don't get any actions, a lot of times people will say, you know, I'm working up a nomination for the RBL, and suddenly people realize that you're serious.
And if they don't believe you, normally a phone call from us generally gets the problem taken care of, because they pretty much realize that it's gone too far.
As far as ISPs go, what ISPs do you think are doing well at trying to stop spam, and what ISPs do you think just don't give a shit? And
Errol's RCN. They have Afterburner.
Errol's in Virginia.
Errol's RCN was bought out by RCN. Yeah. They have Afterburner in the Minions. Yeah. Do not spam from Errol's. They take great glee in killing accounts and taking websites down.
And possibly the most creative nuked messages that they'll come up with.
I have one from Afterburner, something about an ion cannon. Yeah. So,
using spammers as a blade of shielding and space shuttle reentry launches. And it's worth it if you can find, occasionally you can find archived some of their ones. They come up with some really good ones occasionally. Much better than the just, form letters you get from some of the bigger places. A lot of places, the bigger places, you get a lot of what you call auto-acts. You just get something back. We have received your message. And if you're lucky, you get something back saying we have taken the appropriate action. And there's no way of ever verifying, what they've done. I've personally found that it seems like the smaller the ISP is, it tends to be a little bit more extreme. They're either completely, hosting spam and proud of it and everything like that, or they're completely against it. There doesn't seem to be much middle ground in the smaller places.
The other thing a lot of people will pick up on that, and some of it is understanding how the system works, is I have a lot of people that think PSI is horrible or UUNET is horrible because they show up in all these headers, POP site, RAS server. And I'm not saying whether they're good or bad, but what I will tell you is they lease dial-ups to other ISPs. So it's not the PSI or the UUNET, et cetera, customer that's spamming. It's bluelight.com. which is Kmart's free ISP, and a lot of the free ISPs attract spammers. The dial-ups show up as PSI, UUNET, Dial Sprint, and several of the others, but they're really downstream.
Actually, I can vouch for PSINet. The ISP I worked for, we leased PSINet dial-ups around the country for our users to have national accounts. And PSINet would bust a spammer before we even had a chance to see what happened. We'd get a nice letter in the by email saying, this account's been deactivated. Please, remove it from
your
system.
Clean up the
mess. And the problem is you see the spammer always on PSINet, but he's actually going from little ISP to little ISP to little ISP, which is something that's really hard to avoid. And there's actually been talk of having a almost like a communication between the ISPs so that they could say, hey, we've had this guy sign up under three different names on our ISP. Other guys, watch out. We've done that in my hometown up in Charlottesville. We had one of the first spammers I got was a guy that had a beauty supply shop and was spamming, and I called him up and talked to him, and he flat out refused to say that there was anything wrong with it. He refused to change its tactics. He kept spamming while I was talking to him. So we cut off his account. And when I cut it off, he said, well, that's fine. I'll just go to the other ISPs here in town. So I dropped him a line and said, watch out for this guy. He was kind of an asshole. And explained to him. And he went to the other two local ISPs in town. And they refused him service. So he actually ended up on AOL. But
the other thing that a lot of the large dial-up providers are doing, it's a lot easier to forge a credit card and a name than it is to forge the phone number that you dial in from. So in the areas where it's enabled, a lot of them are going to ANI and caller ID blocking, so that when they take them down, they can't get back on from another account. People will sign up for 30 accounts, and just as they go down, they start using the next one.
It's also part of the reason why ISPs have started putting in penalties for spamming.
Mm-hmm.
My ISP, it was $65 an hour an employee for any cleanup charges involved with the spamming. Because when somebody spammed through us from one of our dial-ups, for example, we would have to answer all the complaints that came in, deal with all the bounces that came in, do all the log checks, because we had to make sure we had the right person, do all the checking, calling up the person, talking to them, and all that was carefully recorded. and we charge them for it. But a lot of times now the spammers would use a, you know, like a credit card with a $100 limit on there. And they basically just charge the whole thing to their ISP service, and then that was it.
Okay. I wanted to ask Margie, how did you get involved in maps in the first place?
I started doing this on my own, and I was on AT&T, and I set up, founded or helped found two spam news groups on there where we were teaching people. Went to Nanny. Actually, I spent a lot of time lurking in Spam Cop, which was mainly to get Spam Cop fixed, because at the time it was extremely broken, and it's better.
How did you?
And I was recruited to volunteer, and I volunteered for him for about 3 months and was offered a job, which is kind of cool getting. So it's a hard job, but it's a really cool job.
How did you get involved in the first place?
In spam?
Mm-hmm.
I just got annoyed. I started getting my main account.
Did you have a technical background?
No. Actually, I build buildings. I ran a construction company. And when I first started fighting spam, I went out and I tried to find information on how to read headers, most of which seemed to be written by sysops for mail administrators. And I did not understand one thing they said, so I ended up having to go learn how the Internet worked. And as I learned how the Internet worked, I put up a website for beginners. And as I had to read the information and understand the information enough to explain it to somebody else, I learned how it worked. So I kind of, like, backed into this. So anybody can do it.
That's kind of how I ended up in the abuse department of the ISP I worked at, was that when I came from the university, I was going to the University of Virginia, where there I had been mostly just annoyed at the spam, but I didn't know exactly what I was doing, so I couldn't get anything done. And when I got to the ISP, I saw nobody was doing anything about it and started looking into it. And I ended up writing up a number of pages of FAQs for our users, mm-hmm. and starting a spam reporting service for our users, which by the time I left was actually being used as much by other ISP's customers who would send me spam because they didn't know where else to do it, and they didn't know how to do it themselves. And so they would send it in, and I would teach people how to read headers, mostly because when I would report it, what I would do is I would blind carbon copy them, and I'd break down the headers as I reported it, and they would see from then. And it was actually kind of cool to see one of the users, you know, stop sending it in to me and start sending it in herself, and then she'd email me, you know, with her questions and kind of getting the people out there acting on their own.
Do you know of any cases where some physical action was taken against a spammer? It started off in the virtual world and it went to the physical world, and I don't know if it was necessarily violence or some kind of... Well, I mean, there's vandalism or anything like that, some kind of retribution.
There was a page full of audio files, and I cannot remember where I found them at, that were phone calls to spammers that were recorded, and one of them involved basically what sounded like, and it could have been staged, but what sounded like two drunk rednecks going after a spammer that they had found out lived in their town, and they're calling out the street names as I drive over there, and you hear the guy basically running out the door as the phone call ends, and it was listed as a actual phone call. It was recorded. As I say, there's no proof of the veracity of it, but
because we get threatened all the time. We have people show up at the door at the office.
The hard part's finding.
Yeah, no, I'm saying so. It's there's accusations. Almost, I have never heard of anything like that happening.
There's one here in town. We can go ask him.
Oh,
Sam Curie of Benchmark Toner Supply.
Do these spammers really earn any money? Because for the most part, I just absolutely hate the thought of it. It's annoying. I just go down there and delete them all. And so half the time I'm tempted to go to their website, find out where it is, drop their name and drop their service support number, and a Usenet thing for the spam bots to catch. But it's just, do they actually make any money? Is it worth their time just to jump from ISP to ISP and go through all this hassle?
There's a number of websites that have been mirrored. I brought this up this morning, called Behind Enemy Lines. It was a spammer who pissed off the wrong guy, and he's never identified himself. He just goes by the Man in the Wilderness. And he broke into their system and downloaded basically everything that they had and posted it publicly. And
And there's enough in the IRC logs, ICQ logs in there. And there is enough in there of things that I have independently verified at the time they were happening, that this is now 6 months later, that I tend to believe they're real.
Do they actually make any money, these people?
But not from spamming. They do it from pump and dump stock scams, where they spammertize for stock and they artificially inflate the price of the stock and they buy the stock and sell it.
The spammers...
From selling addresses to people that think they can make money from spam.
They don't make... It seems like they don't make the money from the actual products they're spamming. They're making the money from people who hire them to spam. People don't know any better. And if, you know, see some advertisement on the net for email marketers, which always amused me because the email marketers don't have an email address you can reply to or a web page to go to.
Or the ones that tell you they offer you bulletproof hosting and then they tell you if the site's down, call this number.
There's a nickname for them on the spam L list. It's chicken boners. It's basically when you think of spammers, you're supposed to imagine a guy in a trailer park surrounded by chicken bones from KFC. It's whenever you get the I'm going to sue you messages, which you inevitably get as an anti-spammer, makes it a little funnier.
It's interesting that you should mention Benchmark Print Supply. I received about five spams from the same guy for the same thing. I've been on his list.
From Sam?
Yeah.
Sam's got multiple judgments pending against him.
Well, the interesting thing is that normally I don't get five of the same or similar messages from the same person. When I get above a certain threshold, then I just don't delete it. It will trigger, I guess, my wrath, and I'll track it down with header. I know how to do that. I'll track the headers down and complain, and I complain to the provider. And I got a nice message from them saying that they're going to investigate and take appropriate action, which they don't specify what it is, but they did that. And so it's funny. I did this, and the spam stopped. I was getting it on a regular basis, and the spam stopped from him for a little while.
He hasn't spammed in a couple of weeks. He may be without connectivity right now.
Well, the thing is, then he came back 2 or 3 months later, and I recognized who it was and immediately complained this time around, and then it stopped again.
He's pretty much... blown himself out of the water.
Yeah, he's always kind of gone in waves. He's been one of the more infamous spammers. There's definite proof that some spammers keep lists of people not to spam. One of the Behind Enemy Lines site, there was a list of addresses that supposedly they never spammed. And I know my address was on there, and a number of my customers' addresses were on there. By being an annoyance to the spammers.
Mm-hmm.
If you're the one that's always complaining... And some ISPs will forward on the complaints. They'll just take your name off of there in hopes that they don't rile up.
There were addresses that were scraped out of Nane. There were addresses that were scraped off of SpamL. There were some interesting tagged addresses. The RBL project manager is Kelly Thompson, and there were about 50 versions of Kelly Thompson on that list, most of which were not her addresses. So she figures a lot of people owe her thank you.
It kind of brings me up to another point. Was how many of you in here use ICQ? Yeah. How many of you all ever get spammed over ICQ?
Ooh.
It's one of the things I found. I reported them originally, and at the time, Mirabellus never did anything. And since then, they've been bought out by AOL. I don't know if that's changed or not. But this is kind of more of a humorous anecdote. But I found that if you write back to the people who spam you by ICQ and act really lonely... they won't write you back. I write back with big messages. Will you be my friend and explain how I have no friends and nobody wants to talk to me?
Oh, that's good.
And I've stopped getting spammed. Really, it's
I've heard of that with telemarketers too.
No, with telemarketers, I just tell them whoever they're calling for died.
Or why don't you give me your home number and I'll call you back later?
Yeah. I did almost make a female telemarketer cry when I told her that. The person she was calling for died, but I almost felt guilty.
Speaking of telemarketers, in Missouri, we've had some good luck with it. A lot of promotion, a lot of advertising saying, if you get called by a telemarketer, just tell them real fast, put me on the do not call list, and it ends the call like that, and they never call back. There's some very serious penalties being imposed on folks in Missouri for that. But actually, I had another question since we're kind of going off on other things besides email. I think this maps thing is awesome, and I'm definitely going to be taking advantage of it and telling other people about it. other things on the web, like when people are putting up a web page that's promoting an illegal activity, you know, Nazis or death threats or something like that, is there something comparable, equivalent to MAPS, that helps with that, helps to get those kinds of pages pulled?
No, but 9 times out of 10, that's against the terms of service of the ISP, and they will pull the sites.
Right. If it's a white hat site that you can write to and say, please pull this page, but if they're not cooperative.
There are some things that the web hosts will pull faster than they will pull someone for spamming. Copyright violations are one. Death threats are another. Because they can be held liable,
yeah.
And when it's going to hit them in the pocketbook, they get real fast.
Copyrights are, coming from an ISP, it's one of the things that if there's any question of a copyright violation, we had to pull it right away
right.
Because the penalties are huge. There's also, if you see, like, hate speech, basically,
mm-hmm.
There's it's called hatewatch.org, if I remember correctly. They don't seem to actually do much other than kind of leave some pressure. And then they also list all of the hate sites. And so that's kind of led to them being listed as if you want to find a hate site, you know, go to their site and pick out somebody you don't like. Because they have it broken down by, the racial ones, and then by which races the people hate. And then by, like, sex sites, you know, people who hate women, people who hate men. And just it goes down the list. And it's not anywhere as effective as MAPS or anything like that, but...
But you also have some issues with free speech when you start... One thing about MAPS and most of the other things is content neutral. It's about consent, not content. We don't care if they're advertising a perfectly legitimate product or a stock scam or porn or a religious message. If I didn't consent to receive it, it's a problem. What you're talking about is getting into content.
Yeah. Though admittedly illegal content, especially
illegal
child
content,
porn,
yeah.
You know, you can also contact your local FBI office.
Yes. Okay. I'm not sure if this was a nationwide news story or a local one to Atlanta, but telemarketers got on the nerves of a lawyer, and he started logging how much time he spent on the phone with telemarketers and who these telemarketers were. And after about a few pages of names and numbers, he decided to prepare a form letter that said, you wasted this much of my time, you owe me this much money, this is my hourly rate, you owe me this much money. And, you know, if you refuse to pay, then, you know, I'll take you to court. And he said, surprisingly, about 90% of them sent him a check.
A few years ago, when I worked in a different industry, I worked basically manufacturing, and we would have problems with long distance carriers calling us all the time. And so I started listing how many. Well, we were doing a multi person operation, and the whole operation would have to stop for us to answer the phone, and they were calling on our sales line. And a lot of telemarketers actually, if you just tell them right then that if they keep talking, you're going to start charging them, they'll just go ahead and hang up. No, we never got bothered after that. But one of the other things that this is primarily about, since we brought up the guy that hacked into the site, the man in the wilderness, brought up the behind enemy lines. We're talking about net abuse. It's something that it kind of goes on what I was talking about earlier this morning about politeness and everything when you're dealing with spam. And the first thing is that net abuse in response to a spam is or any other. No matter what happens to you online, taking a net abuse back at them is never appropriate. If somebody tries to give you a denial of service attack, tries to break into your machine, tries to smear you publicly online, impersonate you on IRC, spam you, whatever, doing a attack back at them only gets yourself in more trouble. It doesn't get yourself in more trouble. I'm sorry, I'm misspeaking. What it does is it makes your side harder for your ISP to defend. One of the problems always...
So good.
It does.
especially when you said DOS, because sometimes the only way to stop a DOS attack might be if it's happening then, and if you can, take the computer down that's sending you packets.
That
would be DOSing it back. And yeah. that would.
No, you don't necessarily have to DOS it. You can take it back.
Yeah. That would still be, like,
that's,
I know...
That's called a denial of service. Backhoes come in handy, too.
It really sucks if you get DOS'd and you attack them back, and then you lose your account anyway for doing it. Basically, it comes
that's
down to...
It
comes down to, like,
yeah, but it takes forever to get DSL done.
You know, a good citizen. If you're getting DOS, you should really contact the network it's coming from. You contact the NOC. They always have most of them have emergency numbers. You call them up and say it's coming from here, and it'll be taken care of. Even the big companies like UUNET take care of it right away. And then whenever when they examine the logs, you're in the clear. Because I don't know how many times when I was working in the abuse department that you'd have people fighting back and forth and attacking each other. And then when one of them comes and starts complaining to their ISP, you know, so-and-so did this, you go into it, and it's like a fight in the playground at kindergarten.
Or we've had people that think that the answer to the spam problem is to mail bomb the person that sent it. And, in fact, 99% of the time, the FRUMs are forged anyway. So you're basically mail bombing an innocent third party.
And it also what makes it makes your whole side look worse.
You don't fight abuse with abuse.
Yeah, attacking somebody and cursing at them, even though you're not the typical, you know, anti-spammer or whatever, still makes all anti-spammers look bad. It's kind of like when a proponent of a certain operating system will just, you know, chew out anybody who claims that it's not the perfect operating system. Anybody who reads the comments in /dot knows what I'm talking about, you know. It makes you look better if you hold yourself up to a higher sense of self-worth than a spammer.
On the forged FRUM addresses, do you know if any progress has been made on making that illegal to send a letter with a forged FRUM address?
There are several bills. 3113 is, I think, the most current. Personally, I don't like any of them. There is, however, case law. Flowers.com is the most famous, where people have actually sued the people that have used their domain name for defamation and won very large sums of money.
If you had the ear of someone in Congress and you could get some legislation passed on the whole spam issue, what real short soundbite thing would you really like to see as a law?
Consensual communications only. I'm not a big legislation fan, personally.
Me either.
I mean,
less laws, better.
Because there's too many people out there right now pushing for legislation that have their own agendas, the DMA being one, which is the Drug Marketing Association. The privacy organizations, the consumer privacy organizations, have their own agendas. There's too many agendas, and the people with the money are not the people with the agendas I care for. The problem with people like the DMA pushing it is the DMA is deathly afraid that if opt-in mailing only becomes law, becomes whatever, that the Congress will then go back and use it and try to apply it to paper mail. Bulk postal mail cannot operate off of opt-in. So they fight opt-in because they don't want it to affect their paper mailing, because that's the bulk of their business.
The other problem, too, is also it's kind of like why the state laws aren't as effective as they may be, is because the Internet's bigger than, you know, a state. It's bigger than a country. You know, it's the entire world. So what's illegal in one place is possibly legal in another. Mm-hmm. But if you do it through self-regulation and through ISPs looking after each other, stuff like that,
you
span these borders without thought to them. The Virginia law, I know, if I remember correctly, it's that forging your address is against the law, and breaking the acceptable use policy of your ISP is against the law. And
having
then
spamware on your computer is
against the law. Having spamware is against the law. But then you get into a question of, you know, using a computer that's not in that you don't have permission to use. So if you use an open relay, if you relay rape an open relay, that's against the law. The question is, where do you enforce that at? If the person dials up through AOL, whose main center is in Northern Virginia, does the law account for him even if he never goes through the machines in Nova? Or is it if somebody dials up in Northern Virginia and relay rapes a machine in, you know, Austria? Whose law? It's a question of whose law applies. And while you can wait for the government to figure it out and to have somebody, you know, figure out the jurisdiction and then have them actually served and then try to figure out what charges to press, in the meantime, you know, he's still going on and spamming and doing all the other stuff.
But that gets difficult when, because I was doing some copyright research, and with as long as there have been internet issues and copyright issues, they still don't have the treaty ratified.
Yeah. It's I'm not a lawyer. I don't think anybody at this table is. I don't know if anybody in this room is. Anyway, but and that's really a question for a lawyer. I did a lot of research on the Virginia law and ran it past a couple lawyers when it first came out because it would be something that would directly affect my company. And basically all of them said that the first time you go after somebody under law, it's going to go up in courts until a high court decides on it.
I guess maybe I didn't phrase the question actually as specific as I wanted. Not so much a law from Congress, but when you're doing things to try and get rid of these spammers or get rid of people that are really abusing it, do you ever hit a wall and go, damn, I wish I had authority to do this, or I wish we had this extra piece of leverage that we could use on these folks, something that's not there?
Me personally?
Yeah. I mean,
no.
What other tool would you like, if anything?
Actually, we do really well because most of the time the statement mail will bounce typically gets the point across. The RBL is an extremely effective tool.
Anything
for behavior modification.
Any kind of leverage like that they would do, you know, something to allow you to find more information or stuff like that is also something that just digs more into, you know, everybody. And it's the kind of thing that really, you know, can't be legislated.
Actually, the one thing I would really like that I think would help the whole situation more than anything else is the common public opinion, because we're at a place in the industry right now where we could stop the equivalent of telemarketing or bulk snail mail. Everybody now hates telemarketing. They hate bulk snail mail. We're on the front end of the next generation of bulk mail. What we need are the consumers, because main sleaze to me is the largest danger to the internet that there is. Every large company wanting to send you mail through bulk houses will overwhelm the system. What we need to do is get the consumers to say, we are not going to buy from you if you spam us.
Okay, so it sounds like one thing that would help you to do your job better and to further decrease the amount of spam out there is to get more media attention, help get the word out in a larger way.
Get more correct media attention, and to be honest, get more people using the MAPS list, the RBL, et cetera, because the more of the internet that's protected by the RBL, the more likely someone is not going to want to be listed.
One of the biggest things I also like to see is just more education of the average users
Yes.
in general. So a lot of average users, you know, they know, hey, this is spam, but they don't realize what is spam, what isn't.
And why?
And they just
kind
of use the term generically. And fortunately for, you know, it's used correctly a lot of times, but people don't know what there are, you know. They're actually joking. Completely lost my train of thought. Got distracted by Hormel.
So like next time I go to Thanksgiving or Christmas and I'm talking to a bunch of my relatives that aren't online yet or just got their first account and they lament to me over the roast turkey, Ilanka, I hate the spam. It's so frustrating I can't do anything. And I say, aha, there is something you can do. You should, what would be the one line you'd like me to say?
Start reporting it.
To
the originating ISPs.
Okay.
And it's not that hard to learn. It's really not.
One of the things to also make sure that you do is whenever you are learning it, there are certain things people do when they report spam. And you really want to be careful, too, that you know your own ISP's policies towards its users so that you don't do anything that might get you kicked off. I've known people who, when reporting, have used like been really belligerent and, you know, and just been complete dickheads, really. And their ISP has threatened to kick them off because they're out there basically creating a mess with the ISP's name behind it. You also, like, if you're going to be testing to see if there's any open relays, you want to make sure that your ISP won't kick you off for doing that.
And that is a valid concern.
Yeah, it's something to be very careful about. You want to make sure that you're playing by all the rules, because especially with spamming or something where, to be honest, you are going after somebody's business half the time. If they think they can, they'll go after everything of yours that they can, and you want to be solid. You don't want to have any chinks in your armor.
And something that I said this morning is an abuse desk function is to protect their network. It's not to answer your spam complaints. Yeah. It's kind of nice that it works out that they coincide. I will also tell you from people that I know that work abuse queues, if you write them a snotty mail, you go on the bottom or you go into the bit bucket.
And the best page to educate someone about this stuff is at... You have a nice newbie page at mailabuse.org, or
there's several. Spam.abuse.net is one. I have one that has pictures on header reading, and that's spamabuse.net has some header reading information. I've got one that's kind of. It also has instructions on how to use Sam Spade PC.
There's also if you go to CAUCE, CAUCE, Coalition Against Unsolicited Commercial Email, they have some.
Huh? Yeah,
.org. They have some good links on there and information. There's also sputum.org. I can't pronounce it. It's basically that's a little bit more geared towards Usenet abuse. Probably if you guys are here, you've probably at least heard of the Church of the Subgenius. Sputum was a group that their news group got spammed regularly. And so they formed their own like police force to take care of the spamming. If anybody wants, I have some addresses which I can throw up later or on the screen, or I can give them to you later. FAQs that I've written. She said she had some addresses. But if you go to like to Google and do a search on spam, you'll find all kinds of interesting things. There's the Forum for Responsible and Ethical Email, free. There's a...
Okay, so it's the page.
And here's our site.
I'm just looking for one-line URL, so if my relatives write to me, and a bunch of them do because I'm like their guru, and I can send them this URL, and then they can educate themselves.
Yeah. One of the things that I've always done is and this has just been, since I deal with it on such a regular basis, is kind of just leave a text file of what to do if you've been spammed and you're pissed off. Actually, also another one, if somebody knows and it's not technical at all, gets hit by spam, send them to spamcop.net. SpamCop used to suck, and now it doesn't as much. It's basically an automated reporting system. You have to have some clue on how to type in things to get it to work right, but when I first started as an abuse desk jockey, I hated SpamCop because people didn't know how to use it, and right when I left, I loved it because it's very clear and concise, and it reports everybody for you.
Excuse me.
J-I-E-1. Actually, it's
back here. Do you know who owns Spam.com?
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
Do you know who owns spam.com?
Hormel.
Cormel.
Oh, that's the other thing.
What's their use?
Huh? They make canned potted meat.
Oh, that's it?
And
oh, that's no fun.
Spam Capitals is a product made by Hormel.
Yeah.
So don't ever publish it.
Hormel's been incredibly cool towards like the whole idea. Like, even though their product's kind of used for something that everybody hates, their product name. As long as you keep it in all lowercase letters, they're cool with it. But if you're putting up a web page or something, don't put it in all capital letters unless you're actually talking about the product, because they will have words with you. Actually, to be completely honest, if you go to spam.com, which is their product website, they do have a page of links for information on spam. I guess they get lots of free advertising because people get spam, spam, spam in their head and then go to the grocery store, and it just doesn't compare to Armour potted meat or anything like that.
I brought that one up because that shows you that that tells people how to read an email header that have no idea what the parts of a header are.
What address is it?
JIE1.
Does anybody else have any questions, comments, concerns, wads of cash they want to throw up? Because I'm lazy.
Actually.
Yeah. This is. I'm doing my best to conserve the razor blade population.
Soon.
I only shave about once a week or so, a month.
Gee, got off easy.
Really?
Well, I don't really have anything else to say.
I figured I could ask about Telstra.
Will any of the panelists be at H2K in a couple of weeks? The HOPE 2000 conference 2600 is putting on in New York.
I'm sorry?
There's a hackers convention in New York City, Bastille Day weekend, July 14th through 16th, and I'm wondering if any of you will be there.
I'll be at Origins in Columbus that weekend. So.
And I'll be in California, I think, as far as I know. And actually, we're going to start doing that very heavily now that we've got we have been seriously staffing up over the last couple of months, so that we can do a little bit better job of that.
Are you looking for regional coordinators or people who go out and speak in various regions? I have a friend in Boston I'm sure would be interested in that.
We're always looking for people. I telecommute. I live in Atlanta with companies in California. There's some people that use the office in California and some of us that telecommute.
All right. Well, if there are no more questions or comments, thank you all for coming out, and enjoy the rest of the con.